just going on to have a crack. He is, you know. Oh, I say!
Right, okay, this is Filthy Shambles, episode 39 of season 3. I'm Spooky, and I'm joined by Dan. Welcome, mate.
Hello, mate. How you doing? You all good?
Yeah, I'm all good. You know, all things considered, the weekend was actually pretty good.
I think the good thing for us is that we've had a few days. We've had like a few days to sort of mull over and just get back on the horse, you know, like just to feel good again.
Well, I recorded the Fighting Cock yesterday with Flav and John Bass, and that was...
Yeah, listen to that.
That was, you know, the usual therapy. That's what you need. You need to jump on a call with your mates and just talk about Tottenham. And just, you know, John is so articulate, and he gets his point across so well.
Yeah, he and echoes just a lot of my sentiments, I think, like in terms of my outlook on it.
But do you know what it is, Dan? Do you know the thing that I kind of... It was like a mini epiphany. And again, nothing overly insightful, but when you're having a conversation face to face or on a podcast, which was face to face because we're on webcam, we can see each other's mugs, and you're talking, there's a level of maturity as a person that you need to be consistent at delivering to be able to have a debate or a conversation and listen to the other person, take their points on board, and try and, you know, maybe in your head in the moment, realise what you're saying is wrong and come back with a different perspective, an answer. And it's just, it's real life. It's a real life thing. And then you kind of do have a look at, or from what I remember, what I've seen shared in WhatsApp, some of the conversations on social media are so, because they're posted in words and shared as a tweet, as a statement, I often wonder how these people would converse face to face. Like, would they be able to say the same thing they're saying in attacking Tottenham? They're kind of these cartoon exaggerated emotional outbursts, these kind of outraged knee jerks. Could they articulate those opinions in the same way if they were face to face with me or someone else? Could they get their point across without being laughed at, is basically what I'm saying. And it kind of just pulled me into this place where I've been very comfortable for several weeks. And that is, I kind of know where we're at. I know there's lots of things we can talk about today that are not working out on the pitch, but it's more interesting in looking ahead to how we're going to fix them, because surely we have to fix them going forward. So my point is, it's me. I'm philosophical as fuck. I'm stoic only on a podcast. In real life, if you know me, I'm fucking chaos. But in terms of my personality, I just don't know what I'm doing half the time. But I'm stoic when it comes to Spurs, because I'm like, I don't have the energy. And it's funny that after Newcastle, I was like, okay, it was one of those performances. Fair enough. They happen. They've happened a couple of times recently, but we'll get over it. Where did you fall? I mean, what time did you walk away from the TV in that game? Be serious.
Well, I weren't even watching. That's the funny thing. So I was actually playing a round of golf on the Saturday.
Right, but listen, this is a podcast. We're meant to be... This is what you're doing here. You're never going to get invited on the extra inch if you're just going to say I didn't watch the game.
That's so ridiculous, isn't it? Like, I've seen...
You have seen... You've told me you've seen the game since.
I've seen bits. I've not watched the whole game, but I've watched, like, you know, the old match of the day. Do you know what I mean? And it was quite funny. So my plans for the weekend were made, like, 2 days beforehand. And I weren't even thinking about the Newcastle game all week, like in terms of when it was and stuff like that. I just knew it was who we had next, and it was at the weekend.
Yeah.
And then it got to the Saturday, and I was like, "Oh fuck, we're on at 12:30, so I'm out then." Like, because I'm playing at 1:00.
Oh, lucky you! So mate. Lucky you.
So what I'd done was I got the old I put it on Talksport on my phone in my pocket, like just when I was sort of setting up to start my round and that. And we were 2-0 down before I started the round. I was like, right, I think I'll I think I'll just turn that off then, you know. And, you know, I was with two West Ham mates, so I thought, they don't need to hear this either. Like, you know, we could just get on with our day. And then luckily they went and lost to Fulham anyway, so I could sort of jab them back later on the weekend. So it's fine. But, yeah, man, like, it just sounds like, obviously from what I saw, it was another one of them, wasn't it? Like, nothing came together. There wasn't the intensity. It was basically like, I think we need to be, I'm trying to be mindful of not saying everything that I said after the Fulham game, because you might as well just listen to that, because that was the same type of assessment of that performance, right? Like, there was so much wrong. And I think what was weird was that it's the first time we've had Van de Ven in the side and that's happened. So that was a bit of a worry, I think, personally.
But still, it's not that bad of a stat. If it's only happened
once. No, of course
once,
not. He's allowed a bad game. Obviously, like, you know, he's 22 years old, for fuck's sake.
He fell over twice, to be fair. Like, you know, you can dress that up as you wish, but it wasn't like he was pulled apart at the back. He just slipped a couple of times, which was incredibly unfortunate. To happen once, to happen twice in the same game and concede from both, you can see why he's getting maybe a bit of criticism, but... Yeah, I can't sit here and criticise a guy who is absolutely imperative to the future of that defence, even if that defence as a unit right now is not defending very well. But, I mean, I guess you're lucky you don't really have to watch the game to talk about the things we want to talk about, because this isn't like a after-the-game breakdown minute by minute. This is just like where Spurs are at right now. And unfortunately or fortunately, depending on how you want to look at it, we've kind of had the same conversations over the past several episodes, and Spurs fans are probably having the same type of conversations after every game. Like, we're having very similar first half performances at home. You know, we're having these weird away performances. But it's interesting, Dan, because, I mean, this was mentioned. I don't want to spend the whole pod quoting the Fighting Cock podcast. You can go listen to that latest episode that was dropped, but there were some interesting stats, right? And stats are just that, right? They're representative of something that's actually played out on the pitch. But the eye test is always like the king, right?
Yeah.
But statistically, we've actually got a really good away record. Okay. Mm-hmm. We've had some disastrous away performances, and you tend to remember that. And you look at all the other little bits and pieces. We're fifth, nearly fourth. We have tallied the most amount of points up to this point this season. I know there's a lot of context in that. I'm not saying these are good things, because Conte also accumulated a lot of points at one point and the football wasn't very good.
Yeah.
But I guess my point is, it's not as bad as people are making out. The thing that I'm finding from certain people that I'm talking to, this is completely nothing to do with social media, is that they're frustrated. And I'm trying to understand their frustration, right? Like, what is it that you want? And it comes back to this definition of what a successful season for Tottenham would be at this point. And again, it was mentioned on the Fighting Cock that the top four Champions League is perceived by the media and therefore the fans as success. And if you don't get that, it's somehow a failure. But yet, everything we've done this season has been an improvement on the last 4 or 5 years in every department. It's just that it's way too early for us to see final form Postecoglou, and way too early for us to start questioning. I mean, we can have little caveats, but it's way too early to go, well, why are we so easy to attack? And why Newcastle, the amount of room they had to go through us every single time and look like they were going to score every single time. Why is that happening? Why is he so stubborn? Why doesn't he adjust? Why doesn't he change anything? I think these are the things that are interesting. Like, where are you falling again? Like, it feels like we do this every week, but where are you falling on that in your head? Are you zen? Or are you like scratching your chin and thinking,
No, I'm pretty zen. Like, I think, as I've said already, like,
should hope so on the golf course, fucking hell.
I weren't as zen on my around the goal for the weekend, put it that way.
Oh, what'd you score then? Over par?
Well, it was on a par 3 course, first of all. I'm pretty beginner, so like,
oh, fair enough.
You can only, I wasn't anywhere near par. My handicap's quite high, obviously, at the moment. I don't even know what it is because I can't properly work it out at the moment. But, you know, I'm getting there. I'll keep pushing like Tottenham. I'll keep stick to the plan, what we're being told. Like
rinse and repeat.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, repetition and eventually it will all just sort of like click, right? But, yeah, I think like there's lots to be sort of like happy with from this season. And I don't think that, I think it's two things. Like, I think people seem to be like reacting to a loss like that's it, the season's done. And that's like reflective of what our season is when we lose a game. But then like they're very quick to forget about all the amazing performances we have had this season. And there have been some really good ones. And I think that it's also important to remember the season's not done. Like there's still, what we got, 6 or 7 games left to play?
Yeah, I mean, we've got like, some big games coming up, big
there
games.
There are, but throughout our history of watching Spurs, even in the last decade, we've pulled some results out of the bag at times that you'd never expect. Like, I could see a world where we, like, I'm going to sound mental, I could see a world where we win the three big ones, like Arsenal, Liverpool, City, like the three contenders. I could see it.
Because that would be typical of us, wouldn't it?
Because I could see us doing that and then looking lacklustre against Sheffield United and Burnley. but I'd rather it almost that way round than... Yeah. What do people want? Would they rather that way round or just beat Burnley and Sheffield United and then get spanked in the other three? Like, it's not even about what you'd rather. Like, it's just football. That's just football. Like, you just can't predict it at times. And with the reason that we're going to be so hit and miss is because we aren't the finished article. Like, we've got levels and gears to go through and we need more transfer windows to continue to build the squad that he wants. There's two things that I wanted to kind of like bring into this that I'm not sure if you've listened to, but View from the Lane this week I thought was a really good lesson. I think people should go and listen to that. Like the debate.
So what was sum that up in terms of what you pulled
basically
out
just
that
the debate.
I think is interesting.
Just the debate that they had around. They didn't make it about the overall. I think they've done a really good job of trying not to make it about. Is this working, like Postecoglou? Because I think it's stupid to have that type of conversation when he's not even done one full season yet. They were talking about just Spurs versus Newcastle in the context of that game, and they were right to talk about the good things that Newcastle did as well. Like it's not just us losing because we're choosing to lose. Like Newcastle obviously might have some injuries, but they've got some really good attacking players like within their side, and they just play to their strengths, and players like Isak and Gordon and Gumaraish, like they just had a really good game, and
they got really tasty front three when they're on it.
I love Isak, like he'd be my pick for us to go and sign a striker. Like I think I said it last week, didn't I? I think
I don't think they're going to let him go.
Well, they're going to have to sell to buy. Like that is kind of going to be what their policy is. So. You know,
that's a good point, actually. They're less likely to give up someone like Gordon, I think.
They won't. Yeah, they'll keep someone like Gordon, and I think they'd be less wanting to give up someone like maybe Gimaraish or someone like that. But then saying that, if their scouting's good, they can bring other good people in. Like it just depends, like on obviously what they want to do. But not to make it all about Newcastle. But that was kind of one of the things the view from the lane was talking about, and also just the fact that. They were happy to talk about some kind of, you know, bring home some kind of like hard truths around. Yeah, maybe there's stuff that Ange needs to. There are probably things that Ange maybe needs to improve on as he comes through with us. But he has to, like, just because he's a manager of a certain age doesn't mean he's not allowed to go through things and learn. It's a totally new league to him. He's playing against teams he's never played against before in terms of from a managerial perspective. So we've got to give him that time for that reason as well, like to learn. Do we just think this guy's going to come in with all the answers, having never managed in this league before? Like, I think we have to kind of bear that in mind a little bit as well. And then there was another, it was that kind of coincided with Gary Neville's latest interview on the overlap, which was with Trent Alexander-Arnold. And there was just a really cool segment within that where for about, generally 10-15 minutes. You don't normally get this sort of like chat going on these sort of like things because players and managers of clubs are normally really reserved in what they talk about, right? Because they don't want to give stuff away, like in terms of from a tactical like standpoint. But I thought Trent Alexander-Arnold was really like open, I think, and they were just talking about proper detail in terms of the tactics of who go when the ball goes there, like who goes when, like out of between him, Van Dijk and Salah or whoever it is, and what's the sort of like philosophy around when we lose the ball, like do we try and get back in shape and then press? And it's like, no, because they're a counter-pressing side, it's about whoever's closest just goes, then the others cover. And I think we're sort of like that in terms of how we try to play, right? It's kind of who's try and win the ball back as quick as we can, high up the pitch. It's pressing high up the pitch so that you, if you win the ball in their half, you're able to then, you know, create chances very quickly off the back of it because they're out of shape, right? And I just thought people should go and, I don't want to try and obviously botch it, people should just go and listen to that and see if they take anything out of it like I did, because it kind of just shows you that sometimes it looks nuts what we're trying to do, I think is what I'm getting at. Like, you watch how we play at times and it does look a bit kamikaze, but there's method to the madness, because when it works, it looks brilliant. Like, I remember, listen. And it's not just now. Like, when we had Pochettino first coming to us and was basically trying to instill a playing out the back style of football, I remember that was heart in mouth stuff so often, where we just pass the ball between our two centre-backs until they get pressed and watch Hugo spoon it out for a corner or a throw or something like that. And you think, what are we fucking doing? Shouts from the stands. But then in the next phase, like we get round them and then we go up the other end and score. Like, there's such fine detail in these things of what you're trying to do.
100%. This is, again, there's everybody consumes and digests football in a different way. And often there is this almost desperation and urgency in having that end product immediately. And if you don't see it over the course of X amount of games, which could be a couple of games or it could be up to this point in the season, there are people that default to, I don't think it's working. I don't think he gets it. He's too stubborn. And it's almost like, okay, all right, well, let's just think about this pragmatically. What do you want to do? Start again? Sack him and bring in another manager and start from the beginning and get instant success. Again, you know, this was all discussed on the Fighting Cock. And I think these are the things that I've been talking about all season, to be fair, and being accused of being a happy clapper. But there's certain things that just need time to marinate. And I think we're still in the fridge marinating overnight. We're not even in the oven cooking yet. There's a lot that needs to be worked out, you know, and you don't give up. You know, people, here's the thing, Dan. Everything is dumbed down because we're a very dumb society when we're looking to feed off content. So there's this perception that Postecoglou is basic coach, PE teacher coach. Like, he gets them to attack and that's it. As if there's no other detail and no other tactics to what we're trying to do other than go wide, push, invert the wingers into midfield, put high line. And it's like, well, there's a lot more to it than that. It isn't this stupid playground tactic. And
can I ask you a question just on that as well, Spook? It's genuinely, well, I was just going to
say, just before, what I was going to say is, the stubbornness at this point, this early, is important, because he's trying to drill these players into playing a certain way instinctively. Now, what we know now, or what he definitely knows, and what the guys who are going to be buying players in the summer know, is that we need more. We need to change little things. I thought over the weekend, you know, the wingers were incredibly, they were pushed really wide. I completely agree with the sentiment around Son being a bit isolated in amongst the congestion, you know, in the final third. He hasn't got that Kane player. He hasn't got a player playing alongside him. There's things that aren't quite working out with the midfield. And I think the midfield is so core to everything. If they're not functioning with authority, there's nothing to kind of pin the ball to our feet during the course of the game and kind of pull back the tempo. And I know we play a certain way, but often I feel like the midfield isn't participating in what's actually happening. They're just opening the gate, and Newcastle on Saturday just ran all the way through it. So there's things that are definitely on repeat at the minute, but it's not, I don't think it's a case of, it's not as basic as, oh, we're play out of it, we're fine, we're regain form by just keep playing the same way. I think there is definitely pragmatism to what Postecoglou's trying to do, and we need more players in. We need to reshape the way we line up. And that comes with time. If we're this time next season, if we're having these conversations, then yeah, there's things that we will probably need to work out. And perhaps the stubbornness and all that stuff is something we'd have to look at Postecoglou. But he will know himself if he's failing at the very top. He will understand that he's failing. He's not a bullshit manager. He's not going to blame anyone other than himself. So I just don't want to entertain those discussions at this early in his tenure.
I guess for me, I'm kind of like just living in hope at the moment that what I think we all sort of like think right now, which is that he's being kind of a bit stubborn this season because it's about instilling a new way of playing, like almost in a really exaggerated way, like just because he knows we won't win the league this year, we're not going to win anything. So let's just get you playing in the way I want you to play, and next season we'll make tweaks to that. So it's like the next phase of like our evolution in terms of how we want to play. Like we will defend differently next season, and we will do this differently and go about this way of attacking against these types of play. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, because it goes through levels and phases. Oh, but you can't do it all at once. Like, if you imagine going into a new job or like a course trying to learn something, if you take all the information on board at once, like you're not going to get anywhere. Like they stagger stuff throughout a season or a year, right, or a term, however you want to look at it. But I think for me, it's like I do hope that that is what happens and that it doesn't just turn into this sort of Bielsa mess where everyone genuinely had them figured out, like at Leeds, and it was laughable in the end listening to him in the interviews saying things like, "Well, it's down to the players not doing what I asked them," and you just think, like we've heard all that before, and modern players just don't get on with that, do they? So I think that's just kind of what I'm hoping doesn't happen. But I did want to ask you, like,
go on.
Like. I don't know if you've heard it, but like on when you know, like me, you listen to TalkSport probably a little bit more often than you should, or at least you listen to it at times when maybe you've just been unfortunate, you've signed on at the wrong time or something. Mm-hmm. But there's a couple of times now where that Eric Dyer interview with Gary Neville's been brought up. I think there was once before the weekend, and then there was once since the weekend.
Oh, I know what you're going to say. Go on.
Both times they've done it, they just took things he'd said way out of context.
Yeah.
Like, they're basically saying, they're making out that Dyer's saying Ange hasn't got a clue tactically, or that he's saying Postecoglou doesn't do tactical work. Now, I'm sure you're like me, that when you watch that, that's not the overriding thing you took from that. What I took from it was that he admired Ange, he loved like the training, loved the ideas that he was trying to do. I think his terminology was perhaps unclear, but I think if you read between the lines, you get what he's saying, in the sense that he wasn't having us playing against mannequins like Conte and doing walkthroughs and stuff like that. Everything we do is just different because it's more about how he wants to play, right? In terms of the passing the patterns of play or the passing sort of like options or whatever it might be. I don't have a clue. But I just think, like, do you think that that's the sort of thing that's not helping as well, that that's possibly what's almost fueling some fans when they hear stuff like that and think, oh yeah, I agree with that, that's what I've been saying?
Because like I mean, I don't listen to TalkSport. I mean, I think I listen to it when Flav's on it, like that, and just to support
Fair,
him.
Yeah.
And that tends to be a lot more light humoured. I know Rory's usually sat by him, and it's just, it's entertaining. It's nothing more than that. I don't, you know, it's always pinch of salt stuff. I think that's the tabloid aspect of a lot of football, that you kind of have to box things up and exaggerate things, you know. Oh, the Kane curse. Harry Kane's gone to Bayern Munich and they haven't won the league for the first time in 10 years. If Kane had not gone to Munich this season, Bayern Munich would be nowhere near winning the league. So they were never going to win the league this season because of what Alonso's doing, has achieved. It's the fact that I'm having to try and validate a meme or validate the fact that the meme doesn't work is it's ridiculous. You just accept the meme and you crack on. When it starts leaking into semi-serious punditry, I'm not saying it's dangerous, but I think it fuels people who are slightly moronic. Actually, I'm going to get abused for that, aren't I? Some people are morons, and there's no way you can have that face-to-face debate.
Well, I agree with you. I don't think you're wrong.
And there's other people that have. I've spoken to people at the game, people I know, I've known for years, and they were concerned and worried. But I know deep down that comes from a place of love for Tottenham, that they want it to work quickly. We all want it to work quickly. Do you think after the first 10 games, if the Chelsea implosion had not happened, we could have gone 20 games before the implosion would have no doubt have played out in another form, right?
Yeah, then it probably would have been worse, right, in terms 100%, of the feeling.
Yeah. So, but regardless of the theoretics around that, my point is you naturally want Tottenham to be doing really well. And when it's not, you do then try and question certain things. It's a very normal thing to look at a game, look at a manager, and try and see, well, you know, we've seen this a lot. It's a trend now. So if it's a trend, like, why is it a trend? But we should also know, as football fans, that often these things happen for a reason. Now, sometimes they continue to happen and the manager leaves. And you just have to accept that. There's no winners in that scenario. There's no winners. We all lose. Everybody loses. There's no like, oh, I told you so. Like, well, good luck to you, mate. Wear your crown, sit on your throne. It doesn't matter that you thought you predicted it at the beginning of the season that this guy isn't good enough for us. But the alternative is to have a bit of faith and a bit of belief and give the same amount of spotlight on the positives as you do on the negatives, because people do tend to take the negative, like the Newcastle game or the Fulham game or whatever else, and they kind of just absolutely Oppenheimer, it's just fucking boom everywhere. Yeah. Splits the atom. Oh, but hold on. But how about these games and these performances? Oh, no. That's not the real Tottenham. This is the real Tottenham, the one that can't defend properly.
Yeah. It's like, well, I mean, that's just nonsense.
Now, yeah. Now we're like kids in the playground. We're not having a serious conversation about it. And I'm not sat here. I'm not overcommitting on Postecoglou. Like if I will know. If things are not going right in my heart, I will know I'm getting nervous now because we're not progressing enough. But I genuinely will not be sensitive to that until after the summer. And he said it all along that we need another couple of windows. He said, and everything that you spoke about, all the things that happen, Jod said it on the Fighting Cock. That's the last time I'm going to mention those pricks. I'm one of them, by the way. You know, the Liverpool game and Spurs winning 4-1 at Wembley absolutely dismantled them, right? And obviously Liverpool in the summer went out and bought certain players and they persisted with the way they played. Sometimes with the identity you are trying to kind of evolve and create, you have to stick with it. You have to not lose your bottle. You have to commit to it. And you're going to have good days and you have bad days. And if you step back a little bit and look at the table and look at the performances, we haven't done too badly this season, all things considered. All the tropes that we've had to deal with, all the injuries, the suspensions, the one game a week, all the other little problems that we've had, the fact that we went from bare bones Tottenham playing really well with no players to having a full squad and not playing as well as we did when we didn't have all those players in the team, all these little paradoxes and whatever else. It's part of the learning curve and it's part of that growth. It's painful and it's uncomfortable because you want Spurs to do really well. I think reacting to it with this kind of talk sport, I'm sure on Twitter you've got people going, oh, we didn't buy enough players in the summer. No, mate, we bought exactly what we needed to. You got to do this in steps because Postecoglou will have a season with these players and he might turn around to Levy and everyone else and say, Do you know what? We thought this guy was the one for this position. We're going to need to look at another number six.
Oh, you're reading my mind, Spook.
Do you know what I'm saying? No,
100%. I was literally just going to like bring this up because I actually think that this is like one of the positives we can take out of these things that we have seen this season in terms of like the Brighton, the Fulham and the Newcastle away games where we've been bashed up, right? And like, because I think that tells you a lot about your players as much as like when they're doing well, you need to see what they're doing wrong when they're not doing well. And like, I genuinely think you could like, what excites me is that I think he's the sort of guy who, let's use a really drastic, almost radical example here to make my point. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's the sort of guy that wanted James Maddison, bought James Maddison, and Maddison's been good this season, could have done better and might even do better next year. But he's the only person really like that in our squad. So we need a stronger squad next season. I don't think he'll care about bringing someone in who could displace Maddison if they're better. Because if they're better, that's better for us and the team. Because it's not about individuals, it's about the team, right? Yeah. So let's just say that person, for argument's sake, that he decides he wants to add to the squad in the summer to either maybe not replace Maddison, because that's probably harsh.
But have competition for him.
But certainly at least push him. Because if it pushes him and that makes him better, well, then we're better for it anyway.
Yeah,
of
course.
But if this person comes in and, let's say, displaces him more regularly because they're just performing at a level that Maddison can't keep up with, I'm thinking like a Morgan Gibbs-White. Morgan Gibbs-White, okay, for me, can do all the creative stuff. I mean, he's got much more athleticism than Maddison, and I think he can do the defensive side of it as well. Now, I'm not saying definitively he's a better footballer than James Maddison and that he can do everything Maddison can do and all the rest of it. But you see what I'm saying? That
for the
system, he might actually have more long-term attributes that will benefit us than what James Maddison might have. So that's one area. We obviously all thought that Bissouma, but after 10 games, we thought Bissouma was the guy, right?
Yeah. He might still be
a good squad player. Like, he might still be a really good squad player, but I think we can all see that we're missing some form of kind of like protection for the defence. I was going to say back four, it's basically a back two. Our fullbacks are number 10s, for fuck's sake. So we need someone to protect the defence, like in whatever guise it is, right? And that just seemed to be completely absent between Bissouma and Bentancur against Newcastle.
Yeah.
There was just none of them were able to get near or had a willingness to put a tackle in and get and sort of upset the apple cart. Like, they just got breezed through. And that, I think, is what's happened a few too many times for us this season. We don't really have someone who's going to be breaking things up and almost doing like what seems to be quite basic things. Like, they're happy to do all the pretty stuff and look the fancy stuff, but there's some real hard graft that needs to be getting put in that area that I don't think is quite happening yet. So it'd be interesting to see what happens there. But I won't go through every single player. It could even be Son. It could even be Son that in the long term, Ange thinks there'll be someone we can bring in who, for the long term benefit of the team.
Well, we need a number 9, don't we?
I mean, we certainly need a number 9, and I don't think Son's a number 9. Like, we've seen him play number 9 and score goals against fucking Burnley and whoever else. But let's be real. Like, most half-decent number 9s are going to look good against Burnley this season. Like, I think where Son got like a hat-trick, didn't he, or something. Yeah. But like, he's not really looked good as a number 9 against some of the big teams. Fair play. I think he looked good against Arsenal away. But there's been plenty of games recently where he's not really looked good. I think he's played 3 bad games in a row now. West Ham, Forest. Mm. And
he's
Newcastle.
He's been a bit lost.
He's just not suited to that role. Whoever's in that role, they've got to be good in the air. They've got to be able to hold it up, play with their back to goal, and link up play. I can't say with confidence he does any of those things in that position. Like, that for me is then just fundamentally like a no-no. He cannot play there. And I get that, fair enough, he's kind of having to right now. I suppose it's not really out of choice. Like, the reality is Richarlison's not fit. So he's kind of got to play him there because he doesn't want to play Dane Scarlett there because that's the next option, right?
Yeah.
I kind of get why it's happening, but that's fine. If that's what has to happen for now, then we're going to have to persist through it. It's about what we then do in the summer to correct that. But that's exciting.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I think that's what the positives are, that as much as we're seeing bad performances, it's like, well, what are we going to do to correct that though? If this man is what we think he is in terms of the things he's been saying like throughout the season, he's not going to care about the fact he just bought James Maddison for 40 million quid or even Bissouma was bought 2 seasons ago for 35 million quid. It's like, well, no, we need someone better because they're not doing it. Like, just as an, like, do you know what I mean? I think that's probably how he's going to look at it.
Spot on. So just on the number 9, have you changed? What was your opinion on that actually before? Were you a Ivan Toney fan?
I think it changes weekly with me, to be honest. Like, basically whoever plays well on the weekend before we record. So in this week it's Isak, and then next week it'll be Toney.
Of course Isak, and because I've always been,
but I have to be fair, I think I've been quite like anti Toney for just because I think he's a dickhead, to be honest, like more than anything
I like
else.
Ollie Watkins, man. I think Ollie Watkins is just
he is not... good, but I just don't think I don't think they sell to us.
No. It's that would not happen. You're completely correct, and especially if they do get in the Champions League, right, and they have their adventure. That sounds really patronising. Villa might actually go on to become stable the top four. You don't know. You don't know how football works out. They've got a really good manager.
How old is Watkins as well, by the way? Because he's no spring chicken anymore, is he? I'm not saying he's old, but how old is he?
I'm going to ask Mr. Google, because I don't actually know. I'm going to guess...
He's 28. He's 28 years old. So that kind of like makes you rethink then, doesn't it? Like, does that not...
Whoa, like, why did I think he was younger than that?
Because I'm not saying that we
football
shouldn't.
Football knowledge on my head. Jeez.
I think Ivan Toney's a similar age as well. Like, so. Ivan
All right.
Tony.
Here's a question for you. Because
he's 28.
Yeah. What we're talking about, right? See, even this question is everything that's wrong with football. But at the same time, if you want to be a successful football club, you have to be ruthless in the moment, right? And we have. A process, a project, whatever you want to call it, with Postecoglou right now, got a very good squad of players. Like, you go back earlier in the season, and in fact, you know, I know one or two are out of form at the minute. We have got a good core squad, and we need to add to it. We need to complement that squad and allow Postecoglou to have all the tools in the toolbox. No excuses, that it's just up to the players, the manager, and fate and luck and the rest of it. So, he also has a four-year contract. He is very ambitious and he believes he's going to be a success. I genuinely believe that he believes he's going to be successful at Spurs, right? So when you're looking at players, you are looking at, we've got a lot of young players, up-and-coming players. Destiny's really young, Kulusevski's young, Sarr's young, etc., etc. But you look at these key positions. You look at Son. He does have longevity to his game. But obviously, he's still potentially could still be incredibly important over the next couple of years. But you look at that number nine and you start thinking about who do you bring in? When you look at Watkins and you look at Ivan Toney and you look at their age, they are basically at their peak, at their prime, or will be shifting into their prime in the next season or so. So on paper, 28 for someone who knows the Premier League, and possibly 70 million or so on that player seems like a no-brainer in terms of we need this. We need to fix up. This is the only way we fix up and we look sharp in that position. Yeah. By buying someone who isn't 22, 23 and might need a few seasons to bed in and blah, blah, blah. This is a guy, either of them, that will hit the ground running. And the same could be said about the lad at Newcastle, who I think is a lot younger than the two of them.
Yeah, Isak's 24.
But he looks comfortable in the Premier League. I actually thought Watkins was 24. So I don't know how I got that maths wrong. But fair enough. So I guess my point is...
I get what you're saying. Like, there's two ways of looking at it, though. Because if you was to ask me, would I want any of those three? Like, I'd take any of them. Like, realistically, like, to add to our team, I would take any of Toney, Watkins or Isak. I think all three of them could play well in our system and under Ange, right?
Yeah.
But I think the reason that I brought up the age thing was because it's what football clubs do. They think of resale value and, like, that's what we've been critical of the club for in the past, isn't it? Not seizing the opportunity to sign someone who can come and do something now.
Immediately.
Because they're worried about the fact that they won't have a resale value.
This is my point, Dan, about the four-year contract and Postecoglou, who might look to move on after that, right? I know that's a ridiculous conversation to also have because he's just started his contract at Spurs. But if you believe in the project, if you believe in this process, you want to minimise the amount of time it takes for us to get to phase two of this team. You want phase two to literally be next season, the second season. And by the third season, we're not just marinated, we're completely cooked and we're on a dish and we look absolutely delicious and we taste delicious, right? So you want that by the third season. Therefore, you need players to hit the ground running and to be in their absolute prime by the time we get to that third season, because then that would be the opportunity to look at Tottenham, hopefully, yeah, and say, "Oh, we might win the league this season. We could win the league this season."
I think there's an easy solution. Then you basically just rule out Ollie Watkins, because buying him from Villa will be really expensive.
Yeah,
and buying Ivan Toney won't be not as expensive as Watkins, because they're the same age, and one's coming from Brentford, who aren't in Europe. They'll definitely need to sell, and it's kind of going to be a position where you've got them over a barrel. I don't think there'll be the wealth of clubs asking for his signature that everyone thinks there will be.
It's maybe us and the Scum. I don't know who else is going to be having a look.
Perhaps, absolutely. And then then maybe you get some form of bidding war, but clubs don't really tend to do that often. The only ones who do are Chelsea. They'll just wait for Liverpool to bid 70, and then they'll just come in and be like, "Nope, 110 million. We'll take him."
I like the way they've just decided to pick on Liverpool now. It used to be us. Every time we looked at a player, Chelsea would be like, "Nah, we'll have him."
Basically, what you want to do. I mean, Liverpool played a blinder, because look at what they've done. They ended up with Endo, who's been brilliant for them. Yeah. So, you know, it's funny, old world. But you basically rule Watkins out, just because I think buying from Villa is going to be a pain in the arse. They're going to be in Europe. I know that they're probably on the cusp of FFP, but if they get Champions League, or if they get Europa League, like just European place again, whatever, like a higher league finish, like they're going to probably be fine. There's other assets they can sell off other than Ollie Watkins. And he's just signed like a long-term deal with them during this season. So he ain't going to go cheap. Toney, I honestly don't see a world where he costs more than £40 million. He's not looked amazing since, anyway. I don't think he's looked good, but
you think it's going to drop down to that amount?
Yeah, because look, he's 28 years old. He's coming from Brentford. I don't think he's got an extremely long. He's probably not got an extremely long contract with them, because he's smart enough to know that he's not going to stay there forever, and he's going to want to engineer a move. He's got the stuff behind him from the gambling stuff on him hanging over his head. Obviously, he's acquitted of that. Not acquitted. He's been charged and he's served his time. That. But
I think there's always that risk, though, for
whoever buys him in their head. Like, is he going to be a new, Do you get what I'm saying?
Sorry, mate. I was going to say, everyone will be over that. I know we sang that cracking song when Brentford played. You should have cashed out.
I don't care. Fans won't care. But I just think clubs like that will hang over his head for whoever buys him, right?
But you have a point. Do not
especially repeat. A club like Spurs. We don't tend to be one that misses out on due diligence over the years. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Obviously, apart from Paratici, but there we are. But then, I just think Isak is 24 years old. I think he's got 17 Premier League goals this season, even with the injuries he's had. I just think Newcastle are gonna have to sell someone. They've got. I don't know if they can really afford to let someone like Isak go. Maybe they sell him and they try to bring in the filler from Sporting, I think that's how you say it. Who's banging in the goals over there, but he's not played in England before. So it kind of depends. Do we want to be the ones that seize the day, bring in the person who's already doing it in the Premier League out of Ivan Toney or Alexander Isak, or do we go to the continent and try and bring people in who we think can fit in? And
I think we're going to go for someone who's. I think there are other areas that need formulating and fixing, and I think the one area where you want to get it right almost immediately is up front. I don't think you've got time to fuck about, especially in the position that we are in. We'll have Europe next season, which is what I wanted to ask you about, because once you've got European football of any kind, then you have the capacity to rotate in a positive way. Now, we have, in the Champions League, I mean, ignoring Conte, but in the Champions League, we take that very seriously. Everybody does. It's obviously a great tournament to be part of for very obvious reasons. All the players are up for it mentally. And obviously, European Conference both competitions, regardless of anyone's opinions on those competitions, the club have collectively treated them as chores. And therefore...
Yeah.
We cannot be arsed with it, and the players cannot be arsed with it, and it's just this horrible process of trying to get through those group games and travelling all the way around Europe to some random places and still not taking it seriously, whereas other clubs somehow manage to take it very seriously and go all the way and have a and win a trophy at the end of it. But we've never, maybe to be fair, at the time, especially with Pochettino, we were looking at trying to win the league. So there were moments where you kind of understood what we were trying to do. I think it's a good thing for this football club because I want to see those kids, those academy kids, the ones that are on the cusp of maybe playing more games, play more games by having European football and us being able to rotate properly.
Yeah. But you want to see us take it seriously, though, don't you? You don't want us just to field a team of kids like, exactly. and then go out in the group stage.
Exactly.
That's just
and annoying, you can look at you can look at this season and you can be critical of Postecoglou with the Fulham game in the cup away, but that came really early. And maybe he trusted the players a
little bit more. You can sort of give him a pass, can't you?
Because definitely.
He was never going to be able to look at... He genuinely never was going to be able to look at those other players in the Premier League. Like,
completely agree. And it went to penalties and we could have got away with it, to be fair.
We nearly won.
but obviously it's disappointing when those cup runs don't... And obviously getting City in the cup is just like... I think Adam Nathan, when he's been on, he's often spoken about the cup... You can be up for it. I think he said this at the beginning of the season. You can be up for the cup. You can be in good shape to go on a cup run, and then you get City, and it's done. And it's like, that's exactly what happened. Where are you falling with the whole Villa? Who, by the way, absolutely loved them beating Arsenal at the Emirates.
They were so good, weren't they?
Beautiful.
Like, how did they go from the team that we beat 4-0? To that performance at the Emirates.
There you go. That's football, right? Because how do we go from a team that beats Villa 4-0 and then loses to
then looks like we've never seen a football before at Newcastle.
So it's peculiar. Sometimes there's very obvious reasons and sometimes there isn't. But loved it. I love that they once again appear to be quite fragile in that moment.
It's like pressure, isn't it, though?
It is.
Like when we beat Villa, that pressure was on them to win that game, wasn't it? Because that was like a real big game for like the top four battle. And they obviously just didn't cope with it. Like, they lost their heads on the day after we went 2-0 up. And then Arsenal had to really beat... They really had to not lose. They had to win, but they had to not lose against Villa.
Yeah, especially with Liverpool losing earlier in the day. It was...
Yeah, like they just didn't cope. And it's like we kind of had to keep our heads up at Newcastle and sort of didn't cope either. I guess it's a bit different for us because it's away, but, you know, it's still in our hands. It's a game in hand wasted, isn't it? So
100%. And like
everyone's feeling it, I think.
This is it. It's just the way football is sometimes. And I think... People, supporters of many clubs expect their team to win every week. And if they're not winning every week, it's like, well, sack the manager or do something drastic. These players are not good enough, or blame the chairman. It's like, have you genuinely not understood what it means to actually get to where you want to be going? You're going to have, if you're winning every week, you're already there. Do you honestly believe Spurs are in a position to claim that they're already there, that it's going to click after 9 months or whatever it is? It's just, it's ridiculous to expect that and want that and to be critical for not having it. So we are in this position now, and it kind of ties into everything that we've been speaking about. Like, you've got the media and therefore the fan desperation or not desperation, the tick box, you know, finishing top four would be a successful first season because that's how Champions League qualification is perceived. Where are you falling with it? Would you be comfortable with Europa League football? Do you think we're missing a trick if we don't get Champions League football? Or do you think it doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things? Because regardless where we finish, we still have to get through the summer and into next season because there's a bigger objective at play at Tottenham to be consistent enough to challenge for everything all of the time is where we want to be aiming. And get... Qualifying for the Champions League would mean that, okay, we're doing all right, because it means that in a season of a little bit of turmoil here and there, in a season that's been a bit weird, we finished fourth and got Champions League football. So people would look at that and have put less pressure on Postecoglou, maybe, whereas others might put more pressure on the club to do better in the summer. So where are you? How do you see it? How do you break it down in your head? Are you like, you genuinely don't care? Or would you be gutted with one or the other? Like, what are you thinking?
I think I'll be happy with, if we finish fifth or fourth, I'll be happy. And that's me being completely honest, because I see the benefits of both. It's like, I never really believe, you know, like when people say, oh, we weren't ready for it yet. Like if we qualify for Champions League earlier than expected.
Yeah,
like,
you don't believe in that nonsense statement.
Like, no, okay. I think it's a nonsense. Like, you know, if you lose a game, it's because you weren't good enough. It's not because I don't think it's then relevant to then sit there and say, oh, it's because we weren't ready and stuff like that. It's just a ridiculous argument. Like, you've got to go for it when it's there. Like, you just try and win as many games as you can. If you're winning them and you're getting in the position, then you're there for a reason. So, but yeah, if we got fifth and fifth isn't enough to get Champions League, which it doesn't look like it will be, because Arsenal are going to go out this week and West Ham are coming out this week. So, like, it's probably only going to be the top four in terms of like the, you know, the European places. So the Europa League's become a competition all of a sudden that a lot of people take quite seriously and give a lot of credence to. So I think it's a, you know, it's one that we should want to be in if we're not in it. That or the Champions League. Like, I think it'd be amazing if we got Champions League football, like genuinely amazing. Like, what I did not, like I said top six is probably what I thought would be hopeful for this season. So if we somehow get Champions League football, I think that'll be astonishing. I really do. It's a big achievement.
Yeah, absolutely no doubt. And it will give us something to look forward to, and the club will not be complaining. And Postecoglou, who gets misquoted all the time, or not misquoted, journalists purposely misunderstand what he's trying to say about Champions League football. You know, he's not... They talk to him like that's a good thing, and he's saying, no, it's just a step forward. The good thing is being a contender for the title, because then Champions League football is a given. It's not, are City going to qualify for the Champions League? Yes. It's whether they're going to win the league. And 95% of the time, it's 99% of the time, it's, they're going to win the league as well. But you want to be in that position where you are competitive, basically. Look, we're going to continue chatting on Patreon. We're going to look. I know we've got these 15 days again. It feels like an international break. We're going to look ahead because we have got a congested fixture list coming up. It's absolutely bonkers. We one game a week, and now we're playing like 20 games in the space of 4 days. It's just fucking mad. So we're going to talk about that. North London Derby is the next game that we play. So thank you for downloading and listening free on all the podcast apps. Go to patreon.com/spookyinpurgatory to listen to the rest of this podcast. And thanks for your support. See you later.